And I suggested, why don't we do some chanting? We do some chanting in the Pali language. And they recognized that. And they all put their hands up, and many people started crying. It was the first thing they could recognize in their new country. And they realized they were home, they were welcome. There were monks who could chant in the way they'd grown up with ever since they were small. And that was wonderful experiences. Just a small little act of kindness. And to go out to chant in this international language. So these people who'd been through hell and survived through the Pol Pot years, coming to a new country, could actually, as a first sign of something they could recognize, something of their culture which they could relate to. And that's all they really needed to start their sort of their new life in a new place. But just because it is an international language for Buddhists, and it is a chant which, whether you're in Thailand, whether you're in Sri Lanka, whether you're in Burma, Singapore, or Australia, people can remember. And that's why it is very beautiful to learn. And when you do go to other countries, whether it's here, or whether you go to places like Myanmar to do charity work, and you go to the temple, if you can just start saying, just as they do in Pali, Buddhang Saranangacchami, Dhammang Saranangacchami, Sanghang Saranangacchami, again, they realize, you're a Buddhist, they are Buddhist, and it gives you that connection, your brothers and sisters. That's why the Pali language is something which unites people in many different languages. You may not be able to understand Burmese or Sinhala, but when the chanting begins, you recognize it. And that's very beautiful. So if you'd like to open up your chanting books, and here we go, some more. Well, I'm going to have to go to the toilet in the middle of my talk. I just had a cup of tea, and I've got another cup of tea and 2 glasses of oranges. So if I do ask for a toilet break, you know why. It's not my fault. Let's do the chanting, first of all. So, first of all, we have some communal coughing. Just to get it out of the way before we begin. So here we go. The Arahant is first of all. Aham Sammasambuddho Bhagava Buddham Bhagavanta Adivadehi. A little bow. Now if you're on the chair, just bow forward like I do. But don't bow too far forward if you're on the chair. Otherwise, like me, you'll fall off. Sovakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammam Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavata Sāvaka Sangha Sangham Namami. You remember what that's the next? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. And the next is it the three refuges or the Itippi subjects? Okay, that's Buddha Saranangacchami. Oh no, that's the Itippi sub, is it? Buddha, okay.
Buddha Saranangacchami Dhamman Saranangacchami Gacchami Sangham Saranam Gacchami Dutiyam Hi Buddham Saranam Gacchami Dutiyam Hi Dhamman Saranam Gacchami Dutiyam Hi Sangham Saranam Gacchami Sāmi Tadhyamhi Sangham Saranam Gacchami Ithiti So Bhagava Arahaṁ Sammā Sambuddho Vijācharana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anukkaro Purisadamma Sati Sattva Deva Manusana Buddha Bhagavati Sovatato Bhagavata Namo Sandhichiko Akaliko Ehikasiko Opanayiko Kachata Vedinato Vinyiki Supatipano Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Vajrapatipano Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Vyāyapatipano Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Sāmi-chitāti-pāma Bhagavato Sāvaka-saṅgho Hidādi-māṁśvātāvi-purisa-yukāmi Āsa-purisa-putara Esa-bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Āhuneya Pāhuneya Dākhineya Āñcalikāniyo Ānusāṁ Pūnya Ketam Rotasā.
Now we do the happy sex.
Pānāti pātā vēlāmanī sikāpadam samādhyāmi ādhīmātāna vēlāmanī sikāpadam samādhyāmi kāmesu nīśācara vēlāmanī sikāpadam samādhyāmi mūsāvātā vēlāmanī sikāpadam samādhyāmi sūvāmevāya Mācchāpamādhāpāna Vēlāmanī Sikāpadam Samādhyāmi.
Now we do one in English, from the very end. Swat. Pati Vrsadam. So now we identify. Yes, this is what should be done. In English.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties, and prudent in their ways, heedful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that a wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, we pray for the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any gift in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish a living being, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. I am holding to false views. Love your hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu!
Sadhu! Sadhu!
You must remember the sweet Sadhu. Okay, so you put the chapter book down now. And the first real talk about meditation, last night was just getting you in the mood. It was like a mood talk to set the ambience of this retreat. But now the real teachings of meditation. First of all, a little crusade which I've been on for the last 3 or 4 years. If you've studied Buddhism already or listened to teachings, there are still too many people, so they think that meditation is all about concentration. Please don't even think of that word, concentration. That's got nothing to do with meditation. The word we're trying to use these days for meditation is stillness. Learn how to be still. And that's really important, to don't even contemplate concentration. Because concentration is something you do in school. Concentrate! Said your teacher. And straight away, that makes concentration very scary. And a lot of effort. And number two, in the English language, when you go on a meditation camp like this, If you call it concentration, what does it become? A concentration camp. And that also makes you very scared. So it's got nothing to do with concentration. That was just an unfortunate translation of Professor Ross Davies when he first started translating the Pali into English. It was a nice try, but it was wrong. Unfortunately, it stuck. So don't even think concentration. Think stillness. To see how still you can get your mental world. So peaceful, so nothing hardly moves. That's why you come to a place like this. It is peaceful. Nothing much moves here. There's no traffic. There's no people running backwards and forwards. It's calm and it's peaceful. You go to the beach and it's very still. The waves come in, the waves go out. You know, that's what they were doing the last time I came here a couple of years ago. Going in, going out, going in, going out. It's nice and peaceful because it doesn't change. So when we learn how to relax and things start to get peaceful, they start to get still, we appreciate why we're here, what meditation is all about. It's taking the peace and the quietness of this meditation, of this surrounding hotel, this resort, to take that peace and calmness and amplify it, make it far stronger inside our mental world. So our mind is even more peaceful than the beach, more calm than the swimming pool in the early morning when there's no wind. Absolutely peaceful and calm and still. Doesn't that sound interesting? And especially for so many of you who have been working so hard, struggling to survive in the rat race of life. I know I saw this poster, in the rat race of life, don't be a rat, be the cat. But I thought, that's not very Buddhist. Don't even be in the rat race or be a cat. Be one of the ones in the spectators. Or don't even be a spectator, just even get out of the race altogether. Especially for the next few days. So you can really learn how to slow down so much, you can be very still. And very, very peaceful. And that's what happens after a retreat. You do get very still and very peaceful. It reminds me of one of the old stories. I'm not sure if I told this the last time I was in Singapore or wherever, but I think I told this on the retreat in KL recently, about the man from Australia who went to a meditation retreat for 9 days. And when he went back to work after going on retreat, he was so calm and so still. Even when he walked like in slow motion, like zombie. And he went to work in Perth Zoo. So when he walked into the office and he told his boss, "Good morning, boss." His boss realized this guy had obviously just been on a meditation retreat. He was going so peaceful, so slow. He thought, "What can I do? Well, how can I use this man this morning?" And the boss was very smart. He said, "I've got the job for you." He said, "This morning, I want you to look after the tortoises." Which is appropriate, because someone says it. "Yes, boss, I will look after tortoises." Off you go. So then he walked very slowly and mindfully. What have you got, Nicky? Your meditation must be going very good. So he went to the tortoise enclosure to look after them. And the boss went to check up on him at lunchtime. And when he went there, the gate was open, and all the tortoises had gone. They'd escaped. He said, "What happened?" "Well, boss, I opened the cage, and whoosh." Because when you're going very slowly,
even when tortoises walk out, it's like, whoosh. So, that's when you could slow down so much that even tortoises seem to be going fast. So see if you can slow down that much on this retreat, because we get very peaceful. We can relax. That's what relaxing means. So you're not going so fast in life. You're slowing down and enjoying the moment. So the key word in meditation is stillness. Once that is understood, stillness is the path, then all the rest becomes very easy to understand. How can you be still when you're trying so hard? How can you be peaceful when you're fighting your body or fighting your mind? So instead, you just learn how to relax. And this is my story of how. But you're right in front, so you have to be my sister today. Could you please stand up? So we always need an assistant. So, okay, no, don't. Let's just stand over here. So, now, I am now going to hold this glass of oranges perfectly still. Now my assistant's job is to tell me, with great honesty and sincerity, when the orange juice has stopped moving. So I now begin to hold the orange juice still. Has it stopped yet? Okay, so what's going on? I'll try harder. I've got to concentrate. So William, did you notice actually when I started concentrating it even moved more? Yes, amazing, isn't it? When you really try hard, meditation gets worse. So I could be doing this for years and I'd never ever be able to hold this glass of orange juice perfectly still. So what should I do? Yes, you let it go. You put it back and finish with you. Yeah? Come on, behave. I put it down. Now just put it down. I relax. Just enjoy the moment. I just leave it alone. Is it still now?
Yes.
It's still. Okay, thank you very much. A round of applause for my assistant. I might do that. So, that's a way you get orange juice to be perfectly still. You can't hold it still. You have to let it go. Leave it alone. And it becomes still all by itself. I was sitting here last night. The leaf, remember the leaf? It only moves because of the wind. And you're the one who's doing the blowing. So shh, leave it alone. And then the leaf moves less and less until it becomes perfectly still. So the whole job of meditation is learning how to let go enough. You can just watch this mental world get slower and slower, more and more peaceful, until it gets very still. Now this does not mean you fall asleep and get down. Quite the opposite. Because when the mind gets very, very still, you get this huge surge of energy. And the way to describe that, as I've done many times before, is that the two parts of your mind, one is called the active, what I call the doer mind. That's what is planning what you're going to do, remembering, thinking, taking notes. The thing which is very active, which reacts to whatever you experience in the world. That's called the doing mind. And the other part of your mental world is the passive part. That which knows, that which can see me and hear me and can feel, which knows what's going on inside of you, but doesn't react. That's the knowing part of the mind. Now the problem with human beings, even more so today than probably ever before, we do so much. We have to think, we have to struggle and strive to succeed in this life. We plan so much. We do so much. But all our energy has gone into the active part of the mind. So there's hardly any energy left which is knowing, which is being. In meditation, we let go of all this doing and reacting. We put it down. We let things be. Whether it's unpleasant or pleasant, we just let it be. We open the door of our heart to this moment, no matter what it is, without reacting. Which means when we take all the energy away from doing things, it starts to flow into knowing things. That energy is released, so we can see more deeply. We can hear much more what's going on. We can feel, we can know. As I said last night, we start to wake up. And for those of you who don't know this, the word Buddha, it comes from the verb Bujjati, a Pali verb, which means to wake up. It's the word which every child would know in the villages of India at the time. Now to wake up in the morning is known as Bujjati. This is what the word Buddha meant, someone who's woken up. And this is what happens in meditation when you are still, you're not doing very much, or nothing at all. All the energy goes into knowing. You feel like you're more alive, more awake, more mindful, more here. And you find that all your five senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, has much more energy. You literally become far more sensitive. So even the beautiful gardens in this hotel, this resort, become even more beautiful. The food tastes much better. And even in the sounds, you can hear the sounds of the birds in the morning. And they're just so sweet. They've always been there. But when we've been so busy doing things, our mind has never been open enough to hear, to feel, to know. But that's one of the beautiful things, the benefits of meditation. You realize that there's so much out there which one has missed. And when one slows down, one sees so much more beauty and happiness and joy in the world. So you really see your smile start to get broader and broader, simply just because you're more still. Now there is a feedback mechanism happens here, which is part of the path of meditation. Once you start to wake up, once the mind becomes still, and the mindfulness, the awareness increases, you just see much more happiness, which means you want to be even more still, which means the happiness gets stronger and stronger. It's a feedback mechanism. The only thing we think so much is basically to escape from just being here, from just being still. A lot of times we're afraid of just doing nothing. We always think that everything will go wrong if we don't plan anything out. And it's true, even with my life, if I don't plan, things go wrong. But I've noticed when I plan, they go wrong anyway. So either way, they go wrong. So plan, they go wrong. You don't plan, they go wrong. So realizing it's all the same, I choose not to plan. It is true, isn't it? Anything you planned or thought of doing, I never planned to be a monk sitting in a 5-star hotel teaching you guys. That was not part of my last plan. My last plan was to be in a deep cave, just alone being a hermit, with wild eyes and big long hair, and just say profound things only once every 2 years. Or something weird like that. That was my dream, being this like hermit monk up in the mountains somewhere. Did I get up into the mountains? Well, I live in Serpentine in Australia. It's a little mountain, it's only a couple of, I think it's only about, how? It's 20 meters, no, it's 80 meters above sea level. It's not much of a mountain, but at least it's something. You've always got to be content with little as monk. Contented and easily satisfied, so we couldn't find a real mountain in that part of Australia, so 80 meters high was good enough for us. But, you know, I never planned to sort of do all these things. But this is just what happens in life. So you find, even in meditation, you don't plan anything. You just let things be and see what happens. You just put things down. And amazing! But when you stop all this planning, and you stop all this striving, you stop holding these things, you just leave it alone. Your mind gets very still, all by itself. One of the most amazing things to know about meditation, meditation is not what you do, but what happens when you stop doing things. When you just relax and then leave things alone. And then meditation happens. Just as, you know, I'm a very well-known, famous meditation teacher now. So, I like, you know, saying weird things. Now, some years ago, I went on record by saying, because people say, well, you can teach meditation so well, you've written many good books about meditation, but Ajahn Brahm, can you do that? Ajahn Brahm, can you really get into jhanas? I made the confession. I, Ajahn Brahm, can't get jhanas. Ajahn Brahm can't get jhanas. Ajahn Brahm has to disappear, first of all. And then all these things happen. And I say that because that is true. I have to disappear and stop controlling things. I have to get out of the way. I cannot make these things happen. I have to put things down. And I just watch. And they all happen by themselves. And that is really important for you to know. And that's very difficult for you to do that. Because I'm asking you to do something you've probably never done for a long, long time in your life. Something really scary. It's like you're driving in the heavy traffic in Singapore or Bangkok. And I tell you to take your hand off the steering wheel. Take your feet off the pedals. And see what happens. In meditation it works. In the Singapore traffic you'll probably die. But this is not Singapore traffic. This is meditation. Years and years ago someone gave this wonderful simile. Which shows, or rather describes, using this simile, of why when you let go, everything becomes still and very safe. It is the story of the birds who sleep at night up in the trees. They roost up in the trees, sitting, or rather standing, you might call it, just with two legs. Standing on twigs and branches, and they go fast asleep. And it's very, very rare you get a night where there's no rain and no wind. So imagine that tree is swaying backwards and forwards. You've just got these two little legs to actually to hold on to the tree. If that was you, imagine you go to bed at night, when you can't lay down, you just stand on a tree with your two legs. When it's swaying, would you be able to go to sleep? If you did go to sleep, you'd fall off. But have you ever seen a bird falling off a tree in the early morning? They sleep so soundly, yet they never fall off the tree. Why? And the answer is, I heard this from a scientist. He said, because the nature of the bird's feet, if you like, and their claws. Their feet is so designed that the more they relax, the more they let go, the more they do nothing, the more their claws close. To really get them to close a lot, they have to relax to the max. When they do anything, when they get tense or stressed out, that's where they can't close the feet. So the more relaxed they are, the more their claws close up, the safer they are on the tree. So only the birds will relax, can sleep at night. All the paranoid, psychotic, crazy birds, they're the ones who can't let go enough. They're the ones who fall off and die. They've been excluded by Darwinian evolution a long time ago. Only the birds who can relax can sleep at night. And that's, I remember, that's the same as when I used to first ride a bicycle as a kid. When I first got my bicycle, my first bicycle was maybe a 10-year-old, I think I was. I was so afraid of falling off. So afraid of falling off, you'd grab onto the handlebars until your knuckles were white. You were so stiff because of fear.
And that's where I kept on falling off. I couldn't relax enough to allow my body to move with the curves. When I was afraid of falling off, I fell off a lot. As soon as I relaxed and didn't worry about it, then everything got very loose and your body could sort of move according to the movement of the bike. You compensate. Because of that, you never fell off. Those are little stories. The more you try, the more afraid you are, the more you try and control, the worse it gets. When you let go, relax, just be, you find that everything goes so smoothly, and even your mind gets very, very peaceful. So, the first and most important lesson of stillness is the only obstacle to stillness is you. Try to make it happen, try to control, try to stop things and fight your mind. That is why I've already seen one person here who's got one of our t-shirts from Jhana Grove. This is our meditation center in Perth. And on the back, they've got one of my sayings. Has anyone got that Jhana Grove t-shirt on today? I saw it last night, someone had it on. Okay, but on the back, it's got the main teaching about meditation. Make peace. Be kind and be gentle. That is what you do in meditation. Which is basically saying you do nothing, you just make peace with things. So when you sit down and you look at your mind, don't fight it. Don't try and make it any different. Make peace with it, not war. Now this is one of the reasons when I saw some of the meditation methods where you have to struggle and strive and just go through pain and just fight your mind. There's something about that never made sense to me. Because Buddhism was supposed to be non-violent, was supposed to be compassionate, was supposed to be this wonderful, gentle, peaceful, kind religion. But then when you went to some of these meditation retreats, they even had these monks that hit you on the back with a stick. I went to one of those retreats once. Fortunately, I got really, really good karma. I never got hit. The guy sitting next to me did, and that woke me up for the rest of the retreat. I was not interested. But early in the morning, getting up in this cold place in the north of England, you had to put your blankets around you because it was so freezing. And you know, you're trying not to nod. Early in the morning, and this guy came with this big stick. Walking, he had to, you're facing the opposite direction, you're facing the wall. And then the guy next to me got whacked. Bang! I was, no one's tightness at all, I'm perfectly straight. He said it didn't hurt, but I don't believe it really did at all. But then again, that's not Buddhism, is it? You know, when you sort of do such things to people, no, there's something very wrong with that when you have to use force like that. So no, the real Buddhism is like peaceful and kind and gentle. So people aren't meditating through fear. They meditate with this beautiful sense of peace and stillness and kindness and gentleness. So please, make peace with whatever you experience. You can actually say that to yourself. I'm just making peace with this moment. Making peace with it. Making peace with it. You're not making war. So even if you're tired, make peace with your tiredness. If you feel crazy, make peace with your craziness. I'm a crazy monk. And I'm totally at peace with that. In other words, you let it be. And be kind to yourself. If you're tired in the next couple of days, what should you do? You know the best meditation remedy for tiredness and sloth and torpor? It's called bed. Go and take a rest! We call that in our monastery in Australia, when you go to sleep, we call that meditating flat out. So go and meditate flat out if you wish. Be very kind. Now this actually works. These are anecdotes, but I've been teaching meditation a long time now. And every now and again, These people that come up and say, oh, I've been trying so hard, I've not been able to get anywhere, my mind is all over the place, I can't stop thinking. And I said, this is what you should do. I want you to go back to your room. Go on that bed. Touch yourself in. Turn off the lights. No alarm clock. And just have a sleep. But I can't! It's the middle of the day! Go in your room. Go on the bed. Turn off the lights. No alarm, don't have a sleep. But that's being lazy. Go to your room. And I heard it today, I said, when you wake up, doesn't matter what time, it could be 6 hours, it could be half an hour, I don't care. You get up, have a shower, have a cup of tea or coffee, and then meditate. And you know 100% success rate. People afterwards, they come and tell me, I had the best meditation ever after doing that. That's why, because you relax. You weren't forcing the issue. You weren't trying to achieve things. You were being kind to your body. Because I look at my body as my friend, not as my slave. Unfortunately, many of you treat your bodies even worse than some of these. I've read in the newspapers of Straits Times how some people in Singapore treat their Indonesian or Sri Lankan mates. Even they beat them up sometimes. It's terrible. But you know that's also how you treat your body sometimes. Keep forcing it. It's really tired. You say, I want to go to bed. No, you've got to do some more work. No, I need some tweak. No, it's bad for your health. No, that's why I'm very kind to my body. I had an extra piece of bacon this morning. Even though people said, oh, I said, Bob, you can't eat so much bacon, you get very fat. I said, no, it's okay, body. If you want to be fat, that's okay. Don't have my body. And then my body actually likes me back. Because I like my body, and my body likes me, we have a great time together, so we don't fight. Many of you have got arguments with your body. You're too fat. Do a better diet. Exercise. You're too lazy. Work harder. It's terrible how you treat your bodies. Holding them around and forcing the sick cross-legged on the floor when you're really, really aching. Or when you're meditating, you want to cough, but you don't cough because what other people might say. This is one little thing which I always like to tell in meditation retreats. If you want to cough during the meditation or during a talk, please cough as soon as possible. Don't hold it back. Otherwise, we get what is known in meditation circles as the volcano effect. Because you try to hold it back, suppress it. I can't cough because it's giving a talk. Other people are meditating, I disturb them. And it builds up pressure. And it's going to blow sooner or later. And when it does blow, it wakes everybody. Even in the furthest part of the hotel they can hear it. And worse than that, just like any volcano, not only does it make a big loud sound, it spews all this filthy stuff around everybody sitting next to you. So please, if you want to cough, just cough. And it's done with. Now you see, that's a simile of the way we try and control our bodies. So much so, that after a while our body doesn't like us anymore. Which is why it doesn't cooperate when you want to meditate. There's an ache here and itch there. It's like, people you may have been working with you or for you. They don't cooperate with you. So if you're kind to your body's kind to you back. It's a wonderful thing to know that. So, during this retreat, ask your body, what do you want? You want something to drink? You deal with a cup of coffee. Give it a cup of coffee. Be kind to it. It's no indulgence. Sometimes a brother says, no, I don't need any more coffee, thank you very much. I don't need any more orange juice. No, and the body says, I just want to meditate with you. And you can just meditate for a long time that way. You're not fighting your body, you're being kind to it. And also you're being very, very gentle with your mind. A lot of times people say, oh, they can't stop thinking. You know why people can't stop thinking in meditation?
is because they try to stop thinking. That's the worst possible way of stopping thinking, trying to stop. The best way is use the old reverse psychology technique. See how much you can think. See if you can beat the Guinness Book of Records of the number of thoughts in 10 minutes. More thoughts than anyone else has ever had. In other words, stop fighting, but be gentle. And you find that when you're very gentle with your body and with your mind, the mind likes you. And you like the mind. You don't again treat it like a slave. You treat it like a friend. Your best friend. Now this is no exaggeration. I've been meditating for such a long time now. Me and my mind are great friends. We've had such wonderful times together. Brilliant, wonderful times. But very often, when I start meditating, it's like my mind sees me. Hey, it's a problem. You want to stay together?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll hang out with you for a couple of hours. So me and my mind chill out together. We don't sort of fight each other. We don't try and control each other. We just hang out together. Effortless mindfulness. Just being together. You get so peaceful and so still that way. And you don't think. There's nothing to think about. You just hang out together. All thinking is because you're not relaxed enough. Talk about the mental world. When you really are at peace, relaxed and content, there's no need to think. You're having a great time. How many of you go thinking when you're listening to great music? As I said last night. You know, one of the great things about music is it stops you thinking, because you can't be listening to the music and thinking at the same time. Or even watching movies, you're not thinking. Because the movie is doing the thinking for you. So that's one of the other reasons why people don't like watching TV or movies. It gives them some relief from this constant noise inside their head. But even better than that is just being still. And just be happy to be here. Which means you've got hardly anything to think about at all. So during this retreat, remember, there's nothing much to think about. Now, even though this is the essence of meditation, and you realize I haven't told you what to do, I've told you what not to do. People always want instructions. Ajahn Brahm, yes, but what should I do? I think, oh God, come on you guys, don't do anything, just be. No, but how do I do that? And I just let go, but tell me, what should I do to let go? And they don't get it. Doing anything is the opposite of letting go. But, having caused myself many headaches, trying to sort of force you to let go, now we have all of these skillful means. Skillful means is you think you're doing something, but actually it's a trick to stop you doing things. So the first little exercise which I teach people, which gives them something to hold on to, they think that they're doing something, but actually they're stopping doing things, is a simile of the first step. I don't say talking about stages of meditation, the first level of meditation, present moment awareness, just being here. But how do I do that, Ajahn Brahm? You don't do it. Doing something is what you do for the future. You just are. You're just here. But how do I do that? How do I get there? I can't stop thinking of the past and planning the future. So we give them the skillful means. And this first skillful means, which people love because it gives them something to do, is the suitcase simile. I came on the aircraft. There's a few people who came with me on that aircraft from Singapore, the late Silk Air flight. And they had so much baggage and luggage. I saw you with all these suitcases. And suddenly I'm staying here 4 or 5 days. I'm staying here for 9 days and going back to Bangkok afterwards. I'm on a long trip. How much baggage did I have? Very little. But seeing people with so much baggage, I remember a long time ago, seeing this poor woman, I think it was a Changi airport. They were landed at, you know, one of these gates a long way from the, you know, the immigration area. So this poor lady was carrying these suitcases. I know it must have been sort of before checking in or something. They were carrying these two heavy suitcases. And I saw them, they were obviously in great distress because you know what it's like when you go overseas, doesn't matter how big your suitcase is, you always have to have a strap around it to stop it exploding. No matter how big it is, you always put more stuff in it. So, that is two heavy suitcases, and they were staggering down the corridor, trying to carry these two real heavy weights. And that brought up the simile of the two heavy suitcases which people carry around all the time, not just when you're traveling overseas. And the suitcase in the left hand is called your past. With all your memories, good and bad, which you carry around with you so long, it makes your brain hurt. It makes your heart ache. All those bad memories of who did what to whom. And the suitcase in the right hand represents your future. With all your hopes and dreams and fears and anxieties. All in the suitcase in the right hand. And you've been carrying that around for such a long time too. So in this mental exercise which you can do at the beginning of meditation, once you've settled in, sat down, relaxed the body, and then started to look at your mental world, you imagine, with your eyes closed, imagine you're carrying these two heavy suitcases. And you look at the suitcase in the left hand, and yes, on the outside, are written the four letters, P-A-S-T. The past. And in that suitcase are all your memories. And you imagine, just like it was a real suitcase, how heavy it is. So you know that feeling when you've been carrying things too long, your arm aches and your shoulder hurts? You've done that many times, so imagine that your shoulder hurts, your arms ache, because you've been carrying around the past for such a long time. And then you imagine the suitcase in the right hand, and that too has got some letters written on the outside. F-U-T-U-R-E. That's your future. And that too, very heavy. So your arm aches and your shoulder hurts too. Imagine the weight of those. And then you focus in this imagining exercise on the suitcase in the left hand, your past. And you imagine leaning to the left as you lower the suitcase closer and closer to the floor. When it meets the ground, the weight disappears. But you're still holding on to it. So when you imagine your fingers uncurling from the handle, straightening up your back to lift your left arm by the side, you've let go of the heavy suitcase representing your past. And you feel your shoulder and your arm start to relax and the pain start to disappear as your arm and shoulder on your left side are recuperating and re-energizing. And then you focus on the suitcase in your right hand, the future with all your plans and fears and dreams and anxiety. That's so heavy too. So you lean to the right so you can lower that suitcase down on the ground. And you notice that point when it meets the ground, there's no more weight. You move your hand away from the handle, straighten your back up. So you put the suitcase of the right hand of the future on the ground. So your right arm and shoulder can also relax and recuperate. You haven't finished the exercise yet. Lastly, you look down at those two suitcases. One carrying your past, the other one carrying your future. You put them down. They're safe. No one is going to steal them. You don't need to worry about them. They're there for you afterwards. But you just put them down for the time being. So you can rest and relax. And you're standing right between them. in this wonderful place between the past and the future, called now. The only place you can ever find peace, you can ever relax, you can ever find enjoyment, right now. And you stay there, between these two suitcases, between the past and the future, for the whole meditation. And if during the meditation you start thinking about something of the future, you know, what you're going to do when you go back home after the retreat's finished, or you know, some planned journey in a couple of weeks or months or years' time, or if you're thinking about all the things which happened to you, you know, last week, if you find yourself you've picked up those suitcases, or one of them, do that suitcase exercise again. Imagine you picked up part of that suitcase. It's heavy. Lean down and put it down again. Until you can learn how to be in the present moment. With no past and no future. Just being here right now. And for those of you who do get afraid, thinking, well, if I keep staying in the present moment, what about my future? Please remember, now is the time your future is being made. In this moment, right here, that's the only time you have to do anything about your future. Right now. So if you make this present moment peaceful, kind, and gentle, making peace, being kind, being gentle right now, that's what you're doing right now. You are doing the very, very utmost for your future peace and happiness and love. This is where you build those things, right now. So understanding that gives you much more encouragement, more incentive just to be. And then you get this beautiful first stage of meditation. Just being here, in this present moment. No future, no past, the next few days. You can really relax. You have let go. You've let go of the past. You've let go of the future. Just doing that much will give you so much peace and freedom and happiness. Good health, wisdom, and joy. Imagine, no past at all you have to worry about. No future plans or jobs you need to do next. Totally free of the past and future. Oh, what bliss. So see if you can do that. So this morning, I've given you the main idea of meditation, again, learning how to put things down. Leaving them alone, don't hold things. But especially, how to let go of the past and the future, and just to be. So, if you want to do anything for today, the goal, the teaching of today, is just to be here, be present. As much as you can for the whole day. Even when you're eating. I've seen many people do this. They've got like a spoon, or they've got like some food on the chopsticks. And they've got it waiting over here, while they're chewing something else already in their mouth. And they're also, they're looking down, they've actually got another piece of food piled up, waiting in line. And they're also, their mind is thinking, what's going to come next? So they're using at least three mouthfuls of food ahead of themselves. So that's not being in the present moment. You're not enjoying the taste of the food in your mouth right now when you're thinking what's going to happen next. So, when you have your lunch today, this is your exercise. To see just one spoon at a time, one fork at a time, one piece of food in the mouth at a time, and nothing waiting on the chopsticks. And only when you've swallowed the food, then decide what's coming next. Then put it on the chopsticks, and then put it in your mouth. Swallow it before you get the next piece. It's a tough thing to do. So you probably need the help of your friends. So if you've got a friend, and you're sitting next to them having lunch, and you see their swallow got food in their mouth, and they start to pick something else on the chopsticks, get your chopsticks and knock it off. Stop it. So That was only one mouthful at a time. It's good fun, too. So you got my permission to rub people's chopsticks or spoons. Even mine if you see me doing that. So one mouthful at a time. It gets you in the present moment. You know, also you enjoy your food more. And you get better digestion too. Because you're paying attention to the food rather than thinking what you're going to have next. It means the saliva comes out and by all these other things which digest food. It all comes out. So everything gets digested. That's one of my problems. I've got such good digestion. I don't eat much, but I get so much out of the food which I eat because it all gets digested. Nothing gets wasted. That's why I put on weight. I don't eat much. Not like you guys. I see how much you people eat. I can't believe it. I'm a monk. And the place that you've got is amazing. I mean, it's not just once a day. I thought it was just three times a day. Lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We also have supper, afternoon, snacks. My goodness, how do you do that? The only reason why you don't get fat is because you pay no attention to what you're eating because you're talking so much at the same time. So it just goes straight through you, nothing gets digested. So be careful if you follow these instructions about one spoon at a time or one morsel of food at a time, you're going to put on weight. At least you're going to be happy. It is a very good service or exercise then, trying to be in the present moment. One thing at a time. The other thing about being in the present moment, there's something which I noticed, and I gave a whole talk about this a long time ago, called the in-between moments of life. A lot of times, we're in between things. You know, we've left the hall, but we haven't got to our room yet. Or we've, you know, finished the tea, but we haven't washed the cup yet. We've left home, but we haven't got to work yet. So much of your life is spent in between. Waiting at airports, arrived but the plane hasn't taken off yet. You know, most of your life is lived in between things. And I say those are some of the most important times of our life, not to be wasted. So when you leave this room, and you've not got to your bedroom yet, or the toilet yet, remember those in between moments are really important. Be here. In the in-between moments of life. So when you leave home to go to work, you're not at work. Don't send your mind to work before you arrive. Be in the car, be in the traffic, be in the traffic lights when they stop. Be here, in the present moment. Because you'll find that most wisdom in life happens in the in-between moments. When you haven't arrived yet, you've already left. That's called the in-between moments of life. That's where the action is. That's where we waste so much time. That's where we go off into future and past. So when you're in between doing things, you finish meditation, but you haven't arrived in the toilet yet, that's where enlightenment happens. On the way, not at the destination. So see if you can also be aware of the in-between moments which you experience today. One thing has been finished, you haven't got to the next thing yet, the in-between. That's where you can be present and have a lot of fun and peace. The in-between moments of your life. Because I got caught out once. I was busy at my center, because I'm not just a teacher, I'm an admin person as well. I organize things like everybody else. I build, I do everything, but on this one occasion I was carrying some papers into the office and one of my friends is an ex-monk said, how are you, Ajahn Brahm? And I said, I'm getting there. You know that phrase you say, well, I'm getting there. And then he was much smarter than I was. He said, where are you trying to get to? But oh God, he's caught me out. So are you getting there? Where are you getting to? I'll tell you where you're going. Your coffin. That's your destination. So, every time you say, I'm getting there, I'm getting there, I'm getting there, remember where you're really going to. So change the answer. So now when people say, how are you, Ajahn Brahm? Instead of saying, I'm getting there, I say, I'm being here. It's a much better way. So if you're sick in hospital, And someone says, how are you today? So I'm being here. It's a much better answer. That's a meditative answer. So if they ask you, what are you doing? So I'm being here. Wherever that happens to be. And that way, you are valuing and respecting the in-between moments of your life. You haven't reached the destination. You left the start. You're in between. That is called life. Value that. And know how to be in the present moment. Okay, I have talked a lot as usual. So are there any questions about what I've just been saying? Fine. Tea or a cup of tea? Tea or time? Sorry?
Toilet.
Okay, the three T's. Cup of tea, toilet, or what's another T? Okay, well, what time is it anyway? Probably when you're in the present moment all the time. So your systems will probably know what it means. Okay, we have toilet break, tea break, coffee break, orange break, whatever break you want, but don't break your leg. And come back for 5:30 for the guided meditation. I will guide you into letting go. But remember, on the way to the toilets, please be here. And if anybody asks you, where are you going? So I'm not going anywhere, I'm just being here. So please, have a good time on the way to the toilet. And also on the way back. See you in a quarter of an hour.